You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
NBA fans, the playoffs start today. That is super exciting, but the Pacers and Cavs don't start till tomorrow, so we can preview a series for you while there's still time, and I think the best way to do that is a Locked On crossover episode. So as always, I am your host of Locked On Pacers, Tony East, but with me is the host of Locked On Cavs himself, Chris Manning, to help talk Pacers-Cavs. Chris, how are you? How excited are you for the playoffs?
I'm doing good, man. I'm very excited. I feel like I don't know a lot about this Cavs team to some degree, so I'm very excited to get into this and just see what's actually going to happen. I feel like we've been waiting for – I personally have been waiting to just get to this point for months now.
There is more intrigue in this year's playoffs than I think in probably the last half decade for me. I don't know why. I feel like it's not like an obvious outcome.
Yeah, you know, I think like the Cavs are a mystery to a large degree. The West, obviously, with Houston being so good, opens things up. And, the East has its own interesting bits. And like Jazz or Thunder should be an incredible first-round series between two teams that maybe don't get beyond the second round, but are both just going to like kill each other in that first-round series. And, yeah, I'm with you. I think it feels like less of a formality, and it feels like the conferences themselves are a little bit deeper than – we've been used to. Like, it doesn't feel like we're going to, except for maybe Houston, the Houston series, if they just like wreck the Wolves or something. I think the Cavs and all these teams are just in a position where we're going to learn something about them. And even teams like the Pacers that have been here before are coming in a different way. It's not like this is the exact same group we saw last year.
Yeah, that's something I'm going to watch for the Pacers is, you know, this is their first year of a rebuild in the playoffs. So how do they play will be very telling going forward. And that's a good segue into talking about our own series here of Pacers-Cavs. So with this Cavs team, you know, they shook everything up at the deadline, got a bunch of new guys, shook up the starting lineup. What are your expectations for them in the playoffs this year? I mean, they obviously still have LeBron, so I'm sure your expectations are pretty high.
Yeah, I think the expectations for the Cavs are still for them to make a finals run. I think when you have LeBron James, I think nothing else is really going to stand up to that. And anything else, if they make the Eastern Conference Finals and like lose in seven to like an upstart Sixers team or the Raptors or something, I don't. That's just going to be looked as a failure. And maybe anything other than winning a title is a failure for LeBron. I think getting to the finals with this group would be a pretty big accomplishment, and I think they'd be pretty big underdogs against Houston or Golden State at this point. I also think like Kevin Love talked about this to Dave McMenamin on Friday, and he talked about how the LeBron decision kind of does hang over what's going on, and I think that's all going to lead into this. I don't think it's worth talking about to a granular level right now because there's nothing we can know, and LeBron's obviously not going to give us any new information, and he's not going to make his decision for next year yet. But what the Cavs do in this playoffs and what potential this group shows and who in particular shows potential, you know, is it Larry Nance and Rodney Hood and George Hill, or is it the guys that LeBron has had the last couple of years? What they do will kind of, I think, set the tone for the rest of the summer and what kind of potential they show to potentially get better next year for those guys to be trade pieces for a star that maybe comes on the market. Whatever the Cavs decide to do this summer if LeBron stays, this is going to set the tone for that. This playoff run sets the tone for that. So there's not just the immediate success, but what is going to happen next for this Cavs team. It's all happening right now, and I just want to learn something. I just feel like right now I don't know a ton about this Cavs team. I don't feel like I know a ton about some of these guys yet. But I feel like this is where we're going to learn something for better or for worse.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I think that's often lost in the shuffle of the playoffs, you know, is how indicative it is for the future of a franchise and organization. You know, the Pacers might have there's a path they could have the most cap space in the whole league this summer. And everyone's like, you know, they could get a big free agent if they do well in the playoffs. You know, it's so important to either see success or show some signs of growth going in. I don't think they're going to have that much space, but It is a talk that happens. And I think the Pacers side expectations is the complete opposite, to be honest, though. Their macro is much less heavy from this. You know, LeBron is a free agent. Like, that's about as heavy as it gets outside of the physical games going on in 2 months. Whereas here in Indiana, you know, there's a couple guys with player options, but it seems like most of the team will be back next year. So this year, I think for us, you know, it's more about like establishing a core, playoff how they're going to play in these games, you know, when it's slowed down and the bench is less important, you know, how do these guys really grind it out and get it done? How do these young guys handle? Some of them are playing their first ever big minutes in the playoffs. You know, Sabonis last year played for the Thunder, but he was useless for them. So how is he going to show up as a backup center now? Darren Collison played for the Kings the last 3 years. You know, what's he going to show? Bojan Bogdanovic has never started in the postseason. What's he going to show? So there's just a lot of question marks, and I think that's going to be fascinating, less so than, in Cleveland's case, more of the macro sense, what's going on.
So with this group, with all of these young guys, with this being the start of the first year of the post-Paul George era that I think has gone maybe better than anyone could have expected, especially with how good Oladipo's been, what are you expecting out of Oladipo?
Yeah.
Statistically, he's not been quite at the same level the last couple of months, and maybe that's just wear and tear, but like, are you expecting something big out of him in his first lead playoff role?
So you're right to say that he's been struggling the last couple of months. Most of that is actually pretty much all of it is his three pointer, which, from January 1st, to like mid March was like 29% over that stretch. And with Darren Collison out, it was like 23%. I mean, it was just horrible. But a lot of everything else that he was doing was the same level basically the whole season, which is encouraging and sets him up nicely for the postseason. The only other time he's been in the playoffs was on that Oklahoma City team last year where he got the ball like never. His usage last year in the playoffs as a combo guard who can dribble and score was 16.5%, which is so low. And his PER, I know that's a horrible stat, but it was 6.9. I mean, he just was terrible in the postseason last year. The Thunder never really found the right role for him. And, you know, he didn't show that he could do a lot. But I think in the lead role, I think he's going to do significantly better. And especially because this roster is so cohesive to his talents. You know, they have pretty much everyone can shoot like 1 through 8 or 1 through 9, however many they decide to go in this postseason, can shoot pretty well. And that gives him the space to do what he needs. And he's faster than whoever's guarding him, like literally whoever's guarding him. So he can get to the rim and make stuff happen all the time. So I do think that in that sense, he will be able to do well. But I want to ask you this, but I guess I'll just include it in my answer here. I think if LeBron does his typical postseason defense free safety role thing, I don't know what you guys call it, if you're the sword, but if he does that kind of thing where he's roaming and not really guarding anyone and he just is always helping and jumping passing lanes and just being everywhere because he's the best player in the world, I think that will slow down Oladipo in on those kinds of plays when you have, you know, this crazy robot-like body guy just always in your path wherever you're trying to do and no passing lanes are ever open. I think that will make it harder for him. So I think what's going to be interesting to see is how he reacts to that. You know, he's always been struggling this year with breaking double teams and things like that. So if he has another guy always watching his next move, you know, how does he react? Does he pick the ball up or does he make the right pass? You know, that'll be fascinating to watch for me.
Yeah, I think if you look at the types of starting lineups that Indiana is going to use and the type of lineups they're going to use with, you know, playing a big with Thad Young and with Depo and Collison and Bogdanovic, I think what you're going to see is LeBron is going to definitely play for the safety role, and Jeff Green is going to take kind of that Oladipo role. The Cavs, when they announced that Jeff Green was going to start, had said that they view him as the guy that they're going to use on guys like Depo, guys like DeMar DeRozan in Eastern Conference. What Tyler was really saying is this is what I'm going to do in the finals, and I'm going to have him guard James Harden, and I'm going to have him guard Kevin Durant, which is a whole other level, and obviously, you know, asking a lot of Jeff Green. But in this sense, you're going to see a preview of that. It's going to be Jeff Green guarding Oladipo. LeBron is going to be roaming off whoever he can. I think you'll have Love on the guy who's going to play closer to the rim. So maybe that's Turner, maybe that's Sabonis, maybe that is Thad Young if they decide to get real weird with it. But I think you'll see LeBron roaming off Thad Young. They're going to try to trap, I think, Oladipo or do some version of that to get the ball out of his hands. They're going to make guys like Thad Young, guys like Bogdanovic, guys like Darren Collison beat them, and maybe you'll see George Hill on him as well. Maybe you'll see LeBron, I think, late in the game. You may see him take on that Oladipo assignment, go one-on-one and put Jeff Green somewhere else and then still have the trap come. But I think you're right. I think that is what you're going to see. LeBron is going to try to roam. You're going to see a lot of Jeff Green minutes. I don't know if you're going to see him match Oladipo's minutes. I think that would be a little extreme. And I also think they can have guys like J.R. Smith, guys like George Hill, maybe Rodney Hood, if he's healthy enough, guard Oladipo and try that out. But I think you're right to say that Pacers fans are going to look at last year's series and think of LeBron playing off Paul George quite a bit and see something very similar.
That's fascinating to me that Jeff Green is starting. When I tried to preview the series on my own, I couldn't really figure out who the Cavs would start everywhere. You know, Rodney Hood is who I assumed would be playing the two. I didn't realize that he had this Achilles injury. But he's been finishing like a crazy percentage at the rim in Cleveland, and I know his three's not falling, but he looks like he's been fitting in okay. But I get why they're going with Green because of his body size and athleticism. But the lineup was just fascinating to me. Do you know for sure it's going to be Hill, Green, LeBron, Love, and the center, or is there any rumbling something else?
So it's gonna be is Hill, Hood, LeBron, Green, and Love at the five. So Love at the five is interesting because it makes them, I think, worse as a rebounding team. I think offensively, it obviously makes them very, very hard to defend because Love at the five with LeBron on the floor has been statistically just a juggernaut for them.
Yes.
Love at the five is deadly. He's obviously efficient on his post-ups. He's a very good three-point shooter, and he's been shooting like 45% from three since he came back from his finger break or his hand break, excuse me. So he's been very good for the most part. The what it means, though, it also means you're going to see less of the two big Cavs lineups. I personally am not sure Tristan Thompson is going to be in the playoff rotation on a night-to-night basis. Ty Lue has said, he said about a week and a half ago now, that they are going to have to pick between one or the other at some point. I think that is going to be Larry Nance Jr., but Thompson maybe still plays some. But I think you're going to see a lot of smaller Cavs stuff, and you're going to see them play pretty flexible. As modern as you can get with Jeff Green as your small ball four, or him and LeBron as combo forwards in that type of lineup, that's what they're going to be at. Do you have concerns about how Indiana matches up with that? I think every team should, but like, how do you feel like Indiana deals with that?
So the Tristan Thompson thing is kind of fascinating because they were deciding between him and Nance. I heard about that and I was like, well, that's kind of a twofold curse for the Pacers because with Thompson on the floor, he's far and away the best rebounder on the floor against Indiana because the Pacers are not a very good rebounding team. Sabonis is their best rebounder and he's a second year player. Like, Tristan Thompson could just dominate the glass against his team. So I was like, okay, I get how they could roll with him and have success. But at the same time, yeah, like you said, you know, these Kevin Love at center lineups are just, you don't stop them. Your goal is to outscore them. You know, it's been said ad nauseum that that's the only way to beat those lineups. So I didn't really know what would be better for the Pacers to play against because with Thompson and you guys would get so much more possessions. But I think you have to be more afraid of the Kevin Love at center lineups just because it's so deadly and there's just no counter. I mean, we saw it what was it, game three last year? The Pacers had the 20-point lead, and then they went LeBron and shooters for the stretch of the third and fourth quarters and took it back and won. You know, that's how deadly they can be when they just surround LeBron with guys who just don't miss, and you can't get off of LeBron, so that they're just unstoppable.
So when you look at this series, what to you is the matchup that you're like, okay, if the Pacers are going to take this to the length it can go, or maybe even somehow pull an upset, what is like the matchup you're like, okay, the Pacers have to win this matchup or at least do well in this matchup to have a chance to do so?
I think we need to see Miles Turner be the aggressive version of himself that's not afraid to shoot. Sometimes when he gets more limited touches and his usage is lower, he shoots less. And I mean, that's like, duh. But when his touches are down, when he actually does get the touches, it seems like he, you know, goes into more handoffs or, you know, takes his time thinking more often than just releasing. And he's such a good shooter that I think he could be a key here because, you know, I might be speaking out of place here, but I don't think you think Kevin Love is great at defending in space.
He is not. Definitely not.
And neither is Tristan Thompson. And I know Larry Nance is super spry and, you know, can chase guys around, but I don't think his closeout game is particularly strong. So I think that if Turner can get, you know, his matchup away from the basket, you know, one, if he's hitting his shot, obviously that's great. And he's a pretty good three-point shooter and long two shooter for his size. But two, just pulling guys away from the rim to open up the basket and also, you know, help mitigate some of the rebounding problems this Indiana team has by pulling the Cavs away from the rim. I think that that's going to be just absolutely the massive, massive swing for Indiana on offense because they don't have another. I mean, Oladipo is obviously like they're going to be their guy when the game's on the line, but they don't have another like, you know, a matchup to me that's so close that if the Pacers just dominate, they're going to swing the game. Other than at center, where I feel like Love is obviously better, but I think there's a way that Turner's play style could mitigate that difference and shake up the series substantially.
Yeah, I agree with that. For me, I would say it's Love versus Indiana's bigs. I just need to – Love at the five is something that offensively really works. I think rebounding it can work. But I also just need to see how he does in some of the defensive situations, if he can stay out of foul trouble, and if he can deal with just some of the physical toll. It's something that he has gotten more used to. At the beginning of the season, you can go find his quotes, and he'll talk. He kind of talked about how he didn't really like playing the five. Recently, he said in a scrum that when he was coming back, it was when he was splitting minutes between the four and the five, he did feel the brunt of it. It was feeling that physicality. I mean, I don't know if Indiana is the exact team for him to do it. Maybe if Sabonis gets some minutes in there against him, that could be something, because he's a little more bruising than maybe a Turner. Thad Young doesn't really scream as the guy that can do that to him, but I want to see how he handles the brunt of the physicality inside and how he's feeling, because they really need him. They need him to be that number two guy to really take out a fill the void Kyrie has left to some degree in this year's playoffs. And I think he needs to be fresh, and I want to see how he deals with the five. And he's not going to play only five, but I think we're looking at a situation where the Cavs are going to be at their peak potential when he is playing the five. And I think how Kevin Love handles that responsibility in the playoffs for the first time is going to be really key to watch.
I like that one too. I think Kevin Love actually honestly has one of the more X-factory kind of roles in the series in general, just on both ends. And he has he been the same level of rebounder he's shown historically this year?
I don't think exactly so. He's recently, since he's come back, he's been pretty much a walking double-double. But some of this with the Cavs is we have not seen some of these lineups for large sample sizes, so I really need to see how Love does in that regard as a full-time five in the playoffs for however long we actually see it, because the Cavs have not really been healthy. It's one of the things that, like, George Hill barely got back. They basically punted the season finale against the Knicks because they weren't going to get the three seed, and they played six guys, two of them two-way contract players for the second half. Kendrick Perkins played in that game. Like, they just didn't care. So I just feel like that's something we just need to see, and just see how Love actually does. Like, I think that last year, the five sample size is pretty decent in him being a good rebounder. But I want to see it with this particular group, because Jeff Green's not really going to help there. Is LeBron going to help him out there? That's a kind of a different question. We don't know yet.
Yeah. And if Kevin Love's playing the five, I'm imagining he's guarding the five. I'm kind of slowing my words down so you can interject if that's wrong. But if he is, I think that's going to be, you know, I said they're going to let Victor do a lot of the attacking. I think they'll just have the center come up and do a pick and roll or pick and pop every time, because, you know, Kevin Love is a better defender than the public notion says about him, for sure. But I still think that he's not great. And I think that if they can go at him, I think that's a viable strategy. And if Oladipo is really being guarded by Jeff Green, who is athletic and quick, but isn't necessarily the best pick and roll defender, I think that's an opportunity to get something going for Indiana too.
Yeah. But the thing about Jeff Green is I think he has as long as he doesn't get in foul trouble, I think he'll be okay. I think the quickness will kind of the quickness there is going to be the question for me. I want to see how much room he gives Oladipo. You mentioned that his 3-point shot has fallen off. Does he let Oladipo shoot those? And maybe if Love struggles, they go to the two bigs and you see Tristan and Nance, and maybe that leads to something. Because I personally thought that Nance at the five next to Love was kind of the best starting line that the Cavs could do, even if it meant playing LeBron as a big two or something like that. But I do think that you see that to some extent, and maybe that ends up solving some of the issues with Love, because Nance has been pretty good. I think he was dealing with a hamstring injury. He looks a little bit better as of late, but I mean, maybe that if Love has some issues, they go to him and Nance, and maybe that's where Tristan finds his value in the series, if he's going to have any.
Yeah, I like a Tristan Thompson having value. I hate that people say he's not worth his contract, because he literally won you a title.
He is worn down, I think, more than any player the Cavs have had on their finals team. But I think he, more than anybody, has felt the brunt of that, in part because he was that Iron Man for a long time.
Yes, he was.
And I think he's just felt the weight of that because of his position, because of every factor you could throw out there. I think he's just felt it more than some of the other guys.
Can we talk about George Hill?
Yes, Indiana, who I don't know. I'm going to look right now as we're recording this, but his Twitter name still might be Indiana George Hill. I'm not quite. Yeah, it is. It's still in all caps, Indiana George Hill.
Which is
pretty great.
Oh, I'm a huge George Hill fan. One, because he's from Indianapolis, and I'm obsessed with players from Indianapolis. And two, I just think he's really good. And I think he is like the perfect guard to have next to LeBron. There's a small bit of narrative with him too, because when Darren Collison was in Indiana in 2010, 2009, gosh, I got to remember that better. George Hill overtook him as a starter before they traded him away. So I'm sure Collison has a little bit of chip on his shoulder to prove there, but I think that is a just fascinating matchup. You know, I think talent wise, they're pretty close. Darren Collison having a career year, of course, leads the league in assist to turnover ratio and 3-point percentage versus Hill, you know, might be a little less talented, but is literally a perfect fit next to LeBron and could be just as impactful. And I think that matchup is just going to be fascinating.
Yeah. And George Hill, I think, is the third most important Cav. Like you said, he is a really good fit next to LeBron. His defense is going to be really important, but can he find that, that level of aggression and deference that allows him to score, but also doesn't mean he's hijacking possessions. The Cavs have talked about playing a 10-man rotation. They basically have decided Jordan Clark. Yeah, they basically, because Jordan Clarkson is not a functional point guard. I think they're a little concerned about giving him reins of the offense, but based on how he's played, I think George Hill could have these games where he along with LeBron and Kevin Love is playing 40 minutes a night. I think he could potentially be that important to this Cavs group.
So that suggests to me no Calderon. Do you think?
I think if they go 10 men, you're going to see Calderon.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he's been a steady presence, and I don't think that lasts beyond the first round, maybe the second round, because he's going to get picked on. But I think you're going to see like 8 minutes of Jose Calderon, which is going to be kind of wild.
How is that even possible? How, like, I'm surprised they wouldn't just go LeBron as the de facto backup point guard.
I think they like the secondary ball handling next to LeBron, and I get that. And I think they are rightfully skittish of that being Green or being Clarkson. I think that's just where that comes from. Because Green, if he doesn't get to the line, it can be a waste of possession. And Clarkson has a really – he has been at his best when the Cavs leverage him into spots where he is not in charge of creating his own shot. He's getting set up by somebody else and has a simple decision to make. When they just let him run the high pick and roll or go in isolation, he's just not a very efficient player. Like, out of everyone that they got, he, to me, is the guy that I'm the least a fan of those guys in terms of what they provide. And it's because of stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't know how good Clarkson will be in the playoffs just in general. I mean, he could be great. Like, if he's like a microwave, him and JR both. And also, small tangent, I think JR Smith, his highest career shooting percentage by opponent has to be Indiana. I think he is shooting 85% against the Pacers for his career. But back to Calderon. I think with Calderon, you could actually get away with playing him against Corey Joseph lineups pretty easily. What Joseph offers is like the steadiest hand of all time. He's a super good defender. He doesn't turn it over very often, but he's not a creator at all. They don't really run him through actions. He's more of a pass and cut kind of guy. And I think Calderon can keep up with him and not get killed almost at all if they can stick him on him.
Yeah, I wonder if Indiana just, like, if Calderon plays like 10 minutes in a game, I wonder if when he's out there they just attack him in the pick and roll. It just seems like this, if especially if it's like him and Love, I wonder if that's just like a weak point the Cavs cannot use very much of.
I think they want to. I think there'll be a lot of lineup shuffling in those Calderon minutes and the, you know, LeBron minutes, just because those are the minutes where I think Indiana finally has like a matchup advantage that they can take care of and actually try to find a way to win.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that will be very interesting. But back to Clarkson, do you think he'll be like a backup two, or do you think they'll just go Hood JR mostly and then Clarkson spots in whenever?
I think he's going to have his minutes cut because I think if he's going to end up playing some off guard, I think he should be behind Hood JR and Kyle Korver.
Yep.
But I think he's also going to play, so that kind of leads to does him and Calderon both play like a small amount of minutes? Does one end up winning out over there? That's kind of a little subplot. I think Clarkson, maybe not in this series, but in some other series, is going to have a hard time getting on the floor. But I think we need to see if that's actually going to be true. But because I am sort of down on him. But maybe if it works out, he has a really good game. Tyler will ride the hot hand. So maybe if he has a really big fourth quarter in a game, you will see him keep playing more.
Man, there's a lot of guys that we haven't even talked about who could, like, play. Chetty Osmond's not going to play, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think you might see him in some random defensive purposes, but nothing, I think. So I think him and Tristan are kind of the guys that have been in the rotation that are probably on the fringe a little bit.
And the other one, you just said his name for the first time, and I somehow forgot he existed. Kyle Korver. he plays backup three, basically, now, correct?
Well, plays him two, plays him three. It's kind of just he's at his best when he's on the floor. I think with LeBron, there's a non-zero chance that they start him. I really think you could see him wow. starting too, because Hood's just been, well, he's coming back from some foot soreness. He's been dealing with it for a while. Also was away from the team due to the death of his younger brother, Kirk, for a little bit. So he missed like 7 games in a row at one point because of that and because of the injury. But Hood's also been out, and Rodney Hood not really claiming that shooting guard spot when the Cavs kind of wanted to give it to him. He didn't really claim it emphatically and has been dealing with injuries, I think, opened the door for Korver to maybe start game one of the playoffs. And I think he'll probably be okay. He won't be guarding Depot, and they can probably – I don't know exactly where you would put him. Maybe Bogdanovich is the obvious place, but I think – I think there's a non-zero chance to start. Well, Tyloo hasn't exactly said what his 100%, as far as I know, what his starting lineup's going to be. So I think there's a non-zero chance Korver is that. Let me ask you something about the Pacers. Nate McMillan, the job he's done this year.
Yes.
Does that give you any extra confidence about what this team could do and what kind of series they can make because he's done such a good job at this group?
Yeah, he is really good at a lot of things and not so good at other things. He's not like neutral at many coaching skills to me, but I think what his best skill is player development, and that is why this team is what they are. You know, he all offseason got, you know, Joe Young making three. I know Joe Young's not going to play in the series, but Joe Young hitting the three, Sabonis working on his center moves, Oladipo getting his body shredded to be, you know, this crazy combo guard. You know, he did all the right things in terms of player development in the offseason, and that set them up really well to be where they are. But in terms of on the court, I think his best skill is lineup management and, you know, just having the right group out there, and within that, you know, running the right sets that cater to that group. Their starting lineup has been similar throughout the year, but their closing lineup is just impossible to predict. You know, sometimes Lance Stevenson's out there, Corey Joseph versus Darren Collison sometimes switches off. One time down the stretch this year, they had Glenn Robinson in over Bojan, which they will not do in the playoffs, but you know, that's something they seeked out. And, you know, Sabonis and Turner, you know, would always switch. Thad Young's the only guy that's pretty much always out there in a close game crunch time. Thad Young and Oladipo, obviously. The only two guys that are always out there in crunch time situations. But he always seems to pick the right group. And my intuition always is like, oh, Nate, what are you doing? And then he's right. So I should stop saying that in my head. But, that, I think, has been what he's done well on the court this year. And like I said, on the other end of the he always picks the right sets that cater to those guys. You know, if Bojan's in, the first action they run is always to try to see if they can get him some easy open three, like right away, whether it be some floppy set or some curl with him going towards the basket. And then they'll put Depot in a million pick and rolls, depending on what center's in. They're good at putting guys in the right corners for Sabonis being left-handed versus Turner being right-handed. They just do a lot of the little things well that I know McMillan is ingrained in their heads. But his ATOs are terrible. His defensive scheme is kind of meh. It works really well when you have a guy like Roy Hibbert, but Roy Hibbert is like one of the most unique players of all time. So I think where he's going to excel is in close games, honestly, because he'll get the right groups out there and he's good at that kind of stuff. And I think he'll have a solid rotation to compete with whatever the Cavs throw at him. I think they've been strategizing for pretty much any starting lineup. But I think he will struggle with just LeBron's uniqueness in general. You know, you can't really scheme for that at all. It's hard to run the right sets when you have a guy that is not guarding anybody. So I think he could have a huge impact because he is a pretty underrated coach. He's done a heck of a job this year. But I don't know if his, you know, the set ATOs are going to be huge too, just because those are ways to get easy points and he's not great at those. So we'll have to see how it goes. I think he could do a good job in the series though. He did pretty well last year.
Yeah. I'm very curious to kind of just see what tactics both coaches take. Tyloo being kind of the more of the mystery, but it's going to be interesting to see what Nate does to kind of, yeah, because the Cavs are just nuts, but to see what McMillan does to kind of deal with this Cavs team that there's just, again, to his degree, it's probably kind of harder to game plan for a team that there's not a lot of film on what they're going to do.
This is sort of a Cavs question, but not related to the series. Do you think the Cavaliers head coach, so Tyloo in this case, do you think that is the hardest job to analyze how good someone's doing in the whole NBA right now?
Yeah, I think Ty Lue's an underrated coach.
Yeah, I can't rate him. I don't know what, like, he does, like, well or bad. I don't know what decisions he's making and not making. So it's hard for me to say how good he is.
I think he's good. He's a better ATO coach than people realize. He's better, I think, at game planning than people realize. I think he's very good at relating to the players and having their trust. He's a better playoff coach because he makes very, very good in-between game adjustments. his issues, I think, are kind of in-game, and he kind of does ride with certain guys for too long. I think that those are sort of his issues. But I think because of some of the stuff he does and how he talks about things, I think sometimes he gets bagged on as not being a very good coach. And I think he's better than people realize, even if I don't think he's like a top five coach by any means.
I definitely don't think he's as bad as people say. So I guess I'm with you that he's better than people realize. I just don't know how to assess him at all. Like, I struggle with that so much when I watch the Cavs. But I do like his ATOs. They are pretty good. I think former players tend to have good ATOs, which is odd about McMillan.
Tyler's one of those coaches that I would like. I just would like to see what he would do in a situation that doesn't have that isn't like what the Cavs are. Like, if he was coaching like a rebuilding team or something like that, like, I would just be curious to see what he would do in a situation where he's not like dealing with this kind of group, and he just has like a more generic, like, if he had Utah, what would he look like coaching a good team like the Jazz? That would just interest me.
Man, how much would you be happy to have Quinn Snyder coaching the Cavs?
I mean, I guess it all depends. The question would just be like, how do him and LeBron mesh? That's like, yeah, one of the questions. Yeah. Don't know.
Okay, back to the series though. I'm gonna just say two words, and I want you to respond. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Lance Stephenson.
His Instagram is great.
that video he just posted is my video. I wanna. Make a lawsuit claim here.
Yeah, credit him, Lance. But I'm just curious to see like what he. I don't know. I just, him and LeBron in the series is at least fun. And like, that and like the history and like George Hill playing for with LeBron now in Indiana, against Indiana, after being part of those Pacers teams that really pushed the LeBron Heat teams. Lance's little role in all of this deja vu is kind of interesting.
It's kind of hilarious, you know. What was it, the game in Indiana this year where there's that picture of Lance sticking his tongue out that just cracks me up? Like, LeBron was dominating that entire game and Lance stopped him twice, and all of a sudden he thinks he's the best player in the world. But I like Lance less than most Pacers fans, but I think that he kind of is an X factor because of how he can, you know, seemingly he's in LeBron's head. I don't know if that's the right word, because he's not actually in LeBron's head. He's just more so than anyone else ever has been. And I think that could be fascinating. And I think he might get more minutes than normal because of that. And I'm scared of that, because he's not the most caretaking player.
Yeah, he's an interesting kind of, like, can his ball handling give some of the Cavs issues? Can he outplay guys for off certain sets where he just kind of can beat guys and do Lance things that aren't totally crazy? That's going to be interesting to watch. Is he like the number one X factor you have for Indiana in terms of one guy that really would need to play well for him to make a difference? Or is it like Miles? Is it somebody else?
My number one is Miles, but if Lance hits 40% of his threes, like, the Pacers are so hard to stop, because he's the biggest, like, could be good, could be bad guy every game.
Yeah, and those, you need those guys, but you also do need the guys that are a little more steady. For the Cavs, I'll just say this. I think it's Kevin. It's Kevin Love is my top answer, but to give you somebody different. And that's also not George Hill. I think an X factor that you're going to get looked at is Kyle Korver. Just if he shoots really well, and the Pacers can't account for that, it's kind of hard to stop the Cavs' offense.
Yeah, I'm afraid of Korver. Just like after last year, I just have PTSD of him getting free and making everything. I mean, that game three, he was just awesome. He was just flying around, and it seemed like they knew he was there, but they still weren't doing the things they need to do to cut him off of getting open, and he made all of them. It was made me so mad.
Yeah, they made an effort to track him last year for those first two games, and then the third game he got loose, and teams will do that where they just have a guy marking Korver and chasing him around so he doesn't get open shots, and when that slips a little bit because they focus on LeBron or Love, it's like the Wizards a week ago now, like, had a play where they just cratered on LeBron driving the lane late in the game, and they left Kyle Korver and Kevin Love open on the left wing for open threes, and Korver had a full second to gather himself before he shot. And that just happens because, as goofy as the Cavs are, as some of their personnel is limited, they can still do that because they have number 23.
I want the analytics guy in me to say, all right, if LeBron gets in the lane in that scenario, just let him score. Take the two.
Yeah, don't foul him and just let him get the two.
Don't foul him, let him score. Hope he misses or something weird. That's what you got to hope for. Yeah. That's the worst strategy. Hope LeBron misses in the lane. Yikes.
Yeah.
I don't have a ton else in terms of X factors for the Pacers I want to talk about, but I think we haven't talked about Boyan at all. I think he's going to be a guy in this series, basically. I want him to be in the Korver role of Every time the ball gets in his hands, he makes a three, but I don't think he'll be very impactful in this series.
Yeah. So what is your official Cavs-Pacers prediction?
I made my Twitter one that said Cavs in six, but I hate picking series in six. I'm one of those guys who thinks it's too hard to close out a series on the road. But I think I still stand by six. I think the Pacers can find a way to get their games 3 and 4 under their belt and give me enough false hope to be happy, and then they'll lose in six.
Yeah, I'm going to go Cavs in five. I think the Pacers will – I kind of think the Indiana might win one of the games in Cleveland just out of shock value.
Wow.
Just because things could get weird, and I'm here for weird Cavs. It's always the most interesting Cavs, but I think they're going to get one. I think LeBron just ends up being too much in this series, and that's like easy analysis, but I think – you're going to kind of – something similar to last year where it's kind of competitive and close, but the Cavs are just a little bit better because of what LeBron James does. And maybe – yeah. But I think that just is – it's like very easy to say that, but and maybe we don't learn a lot about the Cavs as a result, but I think that's just kind of where we're headed.
Yeah, maybe after five games, if it's a close series, Larry Drew can start coaching.
You'll have Cavs fans arguing he should have stayed coach because they just hate Ty Lue, and that's like a real part of the fan base. But it is what it is.
Well, Chris, we have playoff basketball in about an hour.
I'm ready. I need the Raptors to blow game one just for my timeline to blow up.
I actually grew up a big Anton Jameson, Gilbert Arenas guy. So
Cavs not legend Anton Jameson.
Hey, 20,000 points, Anton Jameson. Respect the name.
Antoine was great. Cavs fans just forever. Like not me in particular, but there's a sect of Cavs fans that despise that man.
Small affinity I had for him is a large affinity, actually. First basketball jersey I owned was his. Will make me slightly rooting for the Wizards.
And then on the LeBron category, mine was actually a Pacers Jermaine O'Neal jersey. So
no way. That's yeah. Was it yeah. one of the jail striped ones?
It was. I don't know. It was right around maybe like right before the brawl. I'm trying to think of because it was like 6th, 7th grade. I had that. It was like the blue, yeah, the blue one with the Pacers across the front and the number 7 Jermaine O'Neal.
Oh wow, that's amazing! I never even had a JO jersey. Oh, that makes me happy.
Yeah, I love that guy.
That's awesome. Oh man, I hope he kills in the big three. That's such a random thing to say.
I hope every like washed NBA guy just like can find life in the big three.
I know, me too. Do you want to promote anything before we go?
Read Fear the Sword throughout the playoffs. We'll be covering things. We have a big staff covering everything over there. Shouts to SB Nation for letting me have that large staff. And find our stuff over there and find Locked On Cavs, iTunes, wherever you get podcasts.
I like Locked On Cavs for my Cavs news as well. Continue to read our playoff coverage at 8.9 seconds. This Locked On crossover brought to you by the fan-sided SB Nation rivalry, actually.
It's like we're frenemies. It's called we're frenemies.
We're all doing the same hustle.
Yeah.
And is it CMW Rights? Is that what it is?
CWM Rights.
Oh, gosh. Duh, your last name's Manning. Wow, that's embarrassing.
Okay. It's all good.
Wow. Okay. Well, everyone follow Chris on Twitter for Cavs stuff and all the Fear the Sword stuff. And you can read about LeBron's path to the finals again, unless the Pacers do beat them, in which case come to 8.9 seconds and read about our path.
And then go to Fear the Sword as we like cry about the NBA draft.
Oh, you won the tiebreaker with the Knicks, though, right? That's cool.
Yeah, if the Cavs win the lottery, I'm quitting. I have to quit Twitter because when they won the Anthony Bennett lottery when they shouldn't have, like Twitter just or the Wiggins lottery, like the Twitter was the most nuts I've ever seen it. And if it happens again and they get the number one pick and like can use that as a chip, things are gonna get interesting and Twitter will be very angry. Have thoughts about it.
I would like to talk about this, but this is not an on-air talk.
Yeah, well, this is definitely something we can continue, but our listeners need to watch playoff basketball, and they need to watch Cavs Pacers, because I think it's going to be interesting in some way.
They do. All right, everybody, thanks for tuning in. I don't know when the next Locked On Cavs is coming out, but we will have a recap of the game up probably Sunday night. We're going to episodes now.
As will I.
Okay, there we go. So thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy the game, enjoy your weekend, and we'll be back soon.